muster more enthusiasm. Hard to be excited when he knew so little. What can they do? War can apparently summon ghosts to fight for him. War can do much more than that. However, I would say his strength isn't quite at full capacity yet. From the images our security cameras captured, his armor appeared rather dull, his horse emaciated, and nothing close to the crimson shine the legends state. You mean he was weak? That didn't bode well. Chris's satisfaction at beating the horseman dimmed. As war gains in strength, feeding off the strife he encounters, he will be able to do much more. It is said that he can call together the armies of man and beast, both dead and alive. And he obeys my mother. Her lips pursed. For now, but one has to wonder if allegiance can perhaps be swayed. You are, after all, the son, the prince that shall come. For once, she didn't say it with her usual mockery. What of the other horsemen? What do you know about them? The others are named in modern times as Pestilence, who is a she, not a he, for who else but a woman has the finesse to sicken the minds of loved ones to turn against each other. With a simple frown, she can sour milk, shrivel blossoms. In her wake, things are poisoned. Evangeline sighed and smiled. I had her poster on my wall for years. I wanted to grow up to be just like her. That's sick. I know. From what you're saying, she is not just a disease carrier. She is the bringer of all the ills you can imagine. It is believed she brought about the Black Plague. I thought she was supposed to be in prison. Something people escape. In her case, she did, and went on a rampage. But someone caught her and put her back. So we assume, since that was the last major outbreak. But perhaps she's just been biding her time. Let's move on to the next one. Famine. Girl too? No, quite male, and he starves mankind not just of food, but of all the things they need to survive. A person starved of affection will become despondent. A person who has lost all hope becomes weak. And that is when the fourth sweeps in. Death. He is the one who reaps the souls after his brethren have passed by. Hold on. I thought death worked for Lucifer and God. How can he have been locked away? The lords of heaven and hell have angels and demons working in that role, but they are not the original death dealer. So much he didn't know, and it was fascinating to discover. But there was one question he doubted Evangeline could answer. Why would the horsemen choose to obey my mother? Shouldn't they be following me? He asked. I'm the one mentioned in the prophecy. Are you? Again, she cocked her head and bore a small, tight smile. I am the Antichrist. And? Yes, perhaps you are Lucifer's son, but are you truly the son of perdition? Prophecy doesn't say if more than one will rise, just like we can't be sure it will be a son. It could be a daughter. You just called me son of perdition. Yes, but keep in mind, we are talking about scripture written by men in a time of man. Sexism was very much alive and well in those days. It is not too hard to believe that perhaps some well-meaning fellow changed it. That angered Chris. I'm the Antichrist. Yes, but are you the one that will bring about the destruction of the world? Do you want to see life as we know it on this planet end? At that query, Chris didn't reply because, for the first time since people began whispering to him of his destiny, he wondered, what would that mean? Did his becoming king mean everyone had to die? Would he truly destroy this world, flatten all buildings, and burn every single city just to rule? A tingle of awareness had him looking up as Isabel entered the room, beautiful as always, arousing a desire unlike any he'd ever experienced. Igniting a deep need. Would he set the world on fire if it meant having the power to keep her? The world probably wouldn't like his reply. A hellish interlude. Lucifer bellowed as he entered his castle. Bring me Nefertiti. Having heard his mighty call, his eldest living daughter, Bambi, came strutting from an antechamber, wearing stiletto high heels, with real stilettos, he might add, and an outfit to make a father proud, skimpy and slutty. At least one of his children didn't vex him on purpose.
"What's wrong, sir?"
she asked, her tone respectful. She knew when she could test his limits, and now was not the time. "Someone removed the seals and set those bloody horsemen free."
"The seals are broken?"
The falsetto note of her repetition struck him.
"Lie. I smell a lie," subterfuge counted.
"What do you know?" He fixed her with a glare.
"I thought we'd managed to put them back."
"Put what back?" She wouldn't meet his gaze.
"The seals. I never expected they'd come off so easily."
"You removed them?"
"Not me. Muriel."
Her gaze met his.
"But before you get angry at her, I should mention that the little lamb didn't know what she was doing. I took her there to harvest some of the blood aster blooms for a perfume I like. It's the only place they grow anymore. Next thing I knew, she'd yanked a few of the seals off the tomb. But I put them right back. Nothing escaped, I swear."
Little Lamb, Bambi's nickname for Lucifer's youngest child. How the scriptures that spoke of a lamb must mock him.
"How many seals?" he asked. "How many did she remove?"
"Only 5.
"Only?" he boomed.
"Are you sure it's her fault? If the horsemen only just appeared, then perhaps someone else chose to release them."
No one else was to blame. While Bambi's reapplication might have worked temporarily, it wasn't enough to keep that evil contained. And if the horsemen were loose, then...
could it be?
No. He'd sealed that problem away a long time ago. Too long for it to be the culprit behind Chris. Still, he wondered if...
"My Dark Lord bellowed?"
Nefertiti entered his office, every inch the Egyptian sorceress, dressed in a white gown, slit high on her thigh, with golden bangles up and down her arms matching the yellow glint of the torque at her neck. She wore her youthful disguise, hiding her true age, and she was old. He snapped his fingers and stripped it. He wasn't in the mood for artifice or pretense today. The shriveled crone with the creased skin glared.
"Was that necessary?"
"Save your magic for more important things. We have a problem."
"Are you going to whine about the fact that you forgot to wear a condom again?"
"This isn't about my son." "Well, it is, but only indirectly."
And so he related what he'd learned, and his sorceress, a woman born in a time when magic was strong on Earth, and misunderstood, listened. When he was done, her dark eyes took on a pensive look.
"You say the one called War was trying to kidnap your son?"
"Yes, but Christopher foiled him."
"The boy is growing into his powers."
He was, and faster than expected. The kind of strength Chris displayed should take decades to cultivate. Unless,
could he be getting so strong because he inherited the incubi magic?
Nefertiti frowned, which only served to make her wrinkles more pronounced.
"Possibly, but he showed no sign of it when tested. As a matter of fact, he registered rather weakly on all the scales."
"Then explain to me how the fuck he managed to steal War's army out from under him."
"Did he?"
At Lucifer's glare, Nefertiti explained.
"What if this is part of a larger plot, one that is being carefully executed? First, we have the boy, given up at a young age, raised by cultists, and yet somehow hidden from our sight. Then, he just happens to run into a Rasputin, who happens to have a line to the Dark Lord himself, thus forcing a meeting between you. Then, he stole War's army and sent the horsemen packing?
Really?
A horseman of the apocalypse beaten by a child?
A weak horseman. He had to be starving inside his prison."
"Even weak, War still shouldn't have been a match for that boy. Even Bambi could take him. She flung a hand in his daughter's direction. His daughter pursed her lips. Well, that's rude. I'm not completely useless.
The grown-ups are talking, Lucifer said with a wave of his hand. Go over there and be pretty.
And this is why you get nothing for Father's Day, Bambi snapped, strutting out of his office.
She says the sweetest things.
Lucifer smiled fondly after her, then scowled.
Do you think she'll betray me for her brother?
No idea.
Haven't you read any portents, shaken a few tea leaves, ripped out some entrails for signs?
Nefertiti wrinkled her nose. That's for hearth witches. I use more sophisticated methods.
And what do they say?
Nothing. Not a single thing about this boy. He's a blank thread on the tapestry of the future.
A chaos factor that could unweave centuries of careful cultivation that had turned hell into a creaky machine that allowed Lucifer free time to pursue other things.
I'm not a fan of unpredictability, he stated.
You're also not a fan of underwear.
What does that have to do with anything?
Nothing. Just like there's nothing you can do about the boy unless you plan to kill him.
No killing. Not yet.
Perhaps his arrival was related to the problems in hell. Muriel might have laid a smackdown on the mysterious figure behind the uprisings, but Lucifer knew it wasn't over. Someone played games with him.
Daddy!
The voice screeched for him, and it wasn't Muriel, but Bambi who came teetering back in, eyes wide with shock, her hair damp.
What have I said about calling me that? He barked.
You have to see. She pointed at the window, one he kept covered with heavy drapes. He drew the material back and stared, gaped long and hard at the snow drifting down. Hell was freezing over, which meant that the horseman of the apocalypse and his son would have to wait. Because this was bad. So very, very bad.
Chapter 12. Under her mother's disapproving eye, and without her grandfather, who'd ensconced himself in the library mumbling something about needing to check his notes, Isabel set off on a grand adventure in her tiny car, which seemed a heck of a lot smaller with both Chris in the passenger seat and Goshen taking up the back. She drove, which meant Christopher sulked. It's emasculating having you drive me everywhere.
It's my car.
When I inherit the earth, when you get your license and your own car, then you can drive me around. Until then, she patted the dash.
This is my baby, a baby I had to have fixed because of someone.
She shot him a glare. He refused to look abashed. We don't know how much of that damage was from me and how much was from the dead body monster attack.
The monster never touched my car.
Details. She shook her head but smiled. Chris had a certain lying arrogance that some people might object to. However, having grown up in a household that thrived on half-truths and pompous declarations, she found it familiar rather than off-putting.
Where do you think we should go first in New Orleans? She asked.
Why ask me? You're the one who came up with the idea.
Whining about that, too?
He chuckled. No, actually, I'm glad you have an idea, because, I'll be honest, I didn't have the slightest clue where to start. Although I am surprised you didn't ask your grandfather for advice first. He seems to know his shit.
When it comes to the dead, grandfather knows how to put them in that state and keep them that way. He's never found anything to bring them back. Not for lack of trying. According to my mother, after the death of my grandmother, he tried everything he could. Tried and failed.
Is this your way of saying you set me to an impossible task?
She flashed him a glance. It's not impossible.
What makes you think we can do it? Chris asked.
Not we, you. You! You're the Antichrist, son of the morning, the mighty man. If anyone can bring my father back, it's you.
And what if I can't? Doubt crept into his tone, soft and uncertain,
a vulnerability he seemed to show to her and no one else. She reached out to place her hand on his leg. "Then at least I'll know you tried." By trying, he would show he'd meant it when he said he'd do anything to win her hand, prove that he wanted her not just because their families said so, but because he thought she was worth fighting for. The heavy palm of his hand landed upon hers. Awareness flared. Her breath hitched. He took it to mean something more and slid her hand up his leg. She snatched it back. He chuckled. "Once I bring your dad back and we get married, you'll have to stop being shy." "I'm not shy. I just don't think now is the time for me to be groping you."
"It's always the right time to grope me."
"And, as usual, you've managed to turn a perfectly fine conversation into sex."
"Of course I did. I'm a man."
"You're a pig."
"I'm okay with that."
His smile really did its best to melt her panties off. Good thing for the magical chastity belt, because a part of her was tempted to pull over and steam up the windows.
"This is such a bad idea."
The realization that she was on a road trip with the one man who totally turned her on and made her want to forget her morals sank in. How would she keep her hands off him? The man oozed sex appeal and made her virgin body burn.
"Don't start doubting me now. I'm the Antichrist, Ducky. I can do this. I can do anything."
A brash statement, one she truly hoped he could live up to. "Have you talked to your dad since the,
"Have I talked to him since you ran off, leaving me like a chump at the altar?"
She cringed.
"Not really. I did see my sister, though. She was the one who told me you were still alive."
"You thought I was dead?"
"Well, there was that swamp monster. He had your necklace."
He rummaged in his jeans pocket and dangled the amulet. She snatched it.
"You got it back for me."
"Yeah, sure, that's what I did." He smirked. "Why were you asking about my dad?"
"He came to see me just before we left."
"Well, isn't that fucking nice? Sees my girlfriend, but can't be bothered to talk to me," Chris grumbled.
The use of the word girlfriend warmed her, but she couldn't ignore the bitterness in his tone.
"He's the devil, Chris. You can't expect warm and fuzzy fatherly things from him. You should count yourself lucky that he didn't kill you. Rumor has it that's what he does with his sons."
"I'd like to see him try."
Chris looked out the window, fingers drumming the armrest. What did he see? This stretch of highway had nothing of interest. She kept quiet, knowing he ruminated. Sometimes it was better to not push. Eventually he spoke.
"What is it like having a family?"
"You know, you had a family."
"Kind of."
Chris had grown up with the woman who adopted him, but he'd also been the central figure for a cult. He'd lost everything at a tender age when his mother was arrested for murder.
"A real family doesn't lock you in your room watching The Omen so your mom can have an orgy in the basement with strangers in robes."
Not exactly normal family life, and she wondered at his question even as she answered. She spoke softly.
"My mother was the one to always harp on my manners. A lady doesn't slouch, a czarina doesn't burp. Hold your head high."
She actually made me learn to walk down the stairs balancing a book on my head.
"But you love her?"
"Yes.
She might be controlling and fierce, but she does it out of love. She wants me to be the best daughter there is. And in her defense, she hasn't made me do anything she didn't do herself."
"What of your father?"
"Dear Papa, lost during her tween years.
My father was my best friend. He would steal me from my dancing lessons and take me to the field, where he'd teach me how to fight. He would read me stories at night, tales of ordinary people doing great things. He taught me that being me was good enough. Papa didn't care that she didn't have magic. He just loved her."
"I'm never going to experience that, am I?"
"Honestly, with Lucifer as his dad? No, but," she said, reaching to grab his hand for a squeeze, "one day you'll be a father, and you can be all the things you wished you'd had growing up."
"Me? A dad?"
He said it with such surprise. I guess if we got married, we'd have kids. Huh. I never even thought of that.
At least two, she declared. A boy and a girl, preferably.
Or more, Chris declared. A whole bunch of them.
Says the man who won't have to carry them for 9 months and push them out of a tiny hole.
He laughed. Very well. Two at least, then.
A father. He said it with such wonderment, the smile on his face hitting her hard. This was why she loved him. This man, who saw a future with her and greeted it with such happiness. She pulled over.
Why are we stopping? He asked.
She reached for him and hugged him. He hesitated only a moment before hugging her back, his arms winding tightly around her. It seemed only natural for their lips to meet in a kiss, a soft and sensual joining that might have lasted a while if they hadn't heard a distinct pfft from the back seat. A moment later, they were rolling down the windows and gagging.
Your dog reeks, Chris declared, his head hanging out the window as she drove off, trying to push the stench out.
My dog is perfect. He's probably just getting used to earth food.
Earth food? What is he, an alien? Chris mocked.
According to your dad, he's a hellhound.
Hold on a second. I'm the son of perdition, but you get the hellhound? That is so unfair.
I didn't choose him. Gushy chose me, didn't you, my big fluff ball?
She reached over her shoulder to give her dog a scratch. With a glare over his shoulder, Chris muttered, You can keep your dog. I prefer cats.
Woof. Big ones, he added with a side eye at her pooch. As the car chewed up miles, they chatted about this and that, but eventually, when the sign indicated they were close, he finally asked, What do you think we'll find in New Orleans?
Not what. Who? We need to talk to a woman, Marie Laveau.
Who is that?
Only the greatest voodoo practitioner to have ever lived.
Lived? Is she dead?
Yes and no. According to history, she died in 1881.
I smell a butt.
After her death, people claimed to still see her. It could have been her daughter, but in the circles I run in, it's believed she shed her failing fleshy body to assume a new form.
So we're going to see a zombie?
Call her a zombie, and I doubt you'll live very long. Again, I don't know what shape she takes now. Madame Laveau guards her secrets well.
Then how do you know about her?
Because when it comes to the dead and voodoo arts, she's the name that people utter.
So she's a necromancer.
Not exactly, Isabel frowned. How to explain it?
Chris hadn't been raised with the same magical knowledge as she.
A necromancer animates the dead. He imbues the bodies souls have discarded with power. He animates them. But they are mindless things, puppets to the necromancer's will. Marie Laveau is said to have done more than that. She took souls and put them into new bodies.
What happened to the soul that was there? He asked.
She shrugged. Again, not something that's really talked about, but I would imagine the essence was sent on to the next plane.
You mean heaven or hell?
Those are some of the options, yes.
So what are ghosts, then? Are those souls that didn't move on?
For the most part, no. They are echoes of what used to be, leftover energy of that person. Again, mostly mindless, given their actual personality, who they were, departed when the soul did.
But you seem to think your dad is more than a ghost.
He's aware of us. I know he is. And he spoke to you. She turned her gaze from the road to glance at Chris. Ghosts don't speak. Ever.
So if he's not a ghost, then what is he?
I think his soul somehow got separated from his body. He's trapped in that form.
So you want to see if we can stick him back in?
Yes and no. Without a soul, his body probably died. Which means he needs a new body.
Chris groaned.
And exactly whose body do you plan to steal? That was a question she didn't have an answer to. Pulling into New Orleans around the dinner hour, they stopped for food first. Isabel spent much of that time on her phone, doing internet searches. In between bites of his gumbo, Chris asked, "What are you searching for?"
"A store."
"You want to go shopping?" His brow creased, and he paused, his heaping spoon hanging midair. Goshen, thinking he was done, slurped it. Chris glared at the dog, who joined them outside for their impromptu dinner by the food truck.
"I need to buy some things," she said, scrolling through the search results.
"What happened to visiting that Marie chick's grave in the cemetery? It stood to reason that the first place to look for a dead woman was the last place she was supposedly seen."
"We are going to the cemetery. But this is New Orleans, a place where the dead have more power. We are going to need some magic to protect us."
"Why didn't you grab some from your mom?"
"You think I should have trusted any spell from my mother? She is the one who put me in a chastity belt. Given she didn't want me coming here, who knows what she would have given us."
"Good point. But I feel like I should mention that you're talking about trusting some unknown magic practitioner with our lives.
Do you have a better suggestion?"
she asked, getting back into the car and getting them back on the road.
"Isn't magic like a drug dealer? You should never try a new supplier unless your friends try him first."
"Kind of hard to ask for references since I don't know anyone who's ever needed a charm to keep them safe from a dead voodoo practitioner. Although, apparently, it is a Google search term because I got a few hits."
Chris drummed his fingers on the door. "The last time I went asking someone for magical help, she got blown into meat chunks."
"That is unfortunate. But we'll have to take that chance unless you want to call your dad and ask him for some help. You are Lucifer's son, after all."
"I ain't calling Lucifer."
Boldly said, and yet insight had her saying softly, "You don't know how to reach him."
"Yeah, well, it's not exactly as if I have a phone anymore, and he never gave me his number." He shrugged.
"No biggie. I don't need his help."
"There is one way you can get his attention," she advised, stepping out of her car.
Goshen shoved at the window in the back seat, but she shook her head at him. Stores frowned on pets, especially giant-sized ones.
Christopher unfolded himself out of the passenger side and glanced at her over the top of the car.
"And how do I do that? Not that I have any interest."
"Say something nice using his name."
He arched a brow.
"Don't you mean take his name in vain?"
"No, that's for his brother. Your dad hates being complimented, and by compliment, I don't mean telling him he is the most murderous demon known to mankind. Those kinds of things make him stronger. I'm talking about mushy compliments, the kind that he finds insulting, like, 'Hey, Dad, I love you and miss you. You're the best.'"
That truly creased his brow. "That makes no sense. How is that supposed to grab his attention?"
"Try it. You'll see." Now that a connection existed between the devil and his son, Chris could contact him. If he wanted to.
He didn't seem ready, judging by the way Chris clamped down on his expression.
"I don't need him. I don't need anybody."
So he said, and yet his fingers curled around Isabel's as they entered the magic shop with a sign proclaiming, "Pestle and Mortar." From the outside, the storefront appeared rather benign, yet the website promised magic. Real magic, according to the symbol at the bottom, which only true magic shops received. Isabel had never met the Magical Authority, MA for short. The MA governed the use of spells and potions on Earth. It separated the charlatans from the rest. But Isabel had to wonder if they'd make a mistake the moment she stepped into the shop. The interior burst upon the senses with bright colors and light, totally unexpected. She stopped dead, as did Chris. He remarked,
"Are you sure we're in the right spot? Because it looks like a rainbow barfed all over this place."
He had a point. Used to magic that required shadows and vile concoctions of unhealthy color, she couldn't help but gape at the pastels all around. And was that a mural on the wall of a freaking unicorn prancing amidst a field of four-leaf clovers?
"This is the right address. According to its MA symbol, it's legit."
"Are you sure? Because I don't see how this..."
He held up a crystal-shaped horn. Or this, a neon pink rabbit's foot, is gonna help protect us against the dead. She frowned. Perhaps the shop has changed owners. Or whoever ran the place kept the good stuff in the back, which went counter to approved practice. Hiding product tended to gain the attention of human authorities. In her experience, MA-approved shops preferred to deal in the open.
"Hello, children."
The bright and cheery voice came from a rotund old lady who popped out of the back, the beaded curtain rustling at her arrival. "Are you the shopkeeper?" Isabel asked, brow still pinched.
"I am indeed Babette Yager, but you can call me Baba."
The wide smile produced a dimple. The woman appeared so cute and cuddly, so warm and grandmotherly, that Isabel instinctively distrusted it. Poor Chris, being a man, fell for it. "Hi, I'm Chris." He held out his hand, and the little old woman grasped it, held it so long that Isabel took a step forward, only to stop as Babette spoke.
"For he is the wicked one, the destroyer of nations, the king of fierce countenance. At his coming, the armies of dark and light will sweep the land, scouring it clean, remaking the world in a new vision. For he is darkness against the light, the shield against the fiery sword, the king that cometh."
The woman turned to look at Isabel and, with pupils the size of a spinning galaxy, added,
"And you shall be his queen, the strength behind his throne, the mother of the future."
Blink. The lady with the dimpled smile returned.
"My, what a strong handshake you have, dearie," she giggled.
A laugh that held hints of a cackle. Isabel frowned. Had she imagined what she heard? This was New Orleans, a place steeped in magic and portents. Things had happened here, things that left a mark, echoes that sometimes spoke loudly enough to be heard. Christopher certainly didn't act as if the old woman had said anything out of the ordinary. He perched himself on a stool at the counter and took the cookie offered on a plate that appeared out of nowhere. He smiled, a tad too widely to be genuine.
"Won't you have a nibble, dearie?"
The plate, fine china with a flower pattern around the edges, extended in her direction, the cookies on it large and gooey, still warm to the touch. "Are they poisoned?" she asked, turning it around to peek and then bringing it close for a sniff.
"What a silly question, dearie," chortled Babette.
"If they are, I'm going to die happy because they are damned good," Chris declared, grabbing a second. He inhaled it and then washed it down with the glass of milk on the counter, made of wood, butcher block style, old and scarred and at odds with the rest of the store. Isabel perched on a stool beside him and took a note of the glass jars behind the counter, filled with candy for the most part, strange creations with odder names. Gummy eye of newt, fuzzy spider, mermaid hair, leprechaun tongue. The green on those was a nice touch.
"Who are you?" Isabel asked. "Are you simple, dearie? I told you my name," said with a bit of a bite.
"You told me a name. I don't believe it. The magical authority wouldn't have certified a charlatan dealing in rabbit's feet and candy.
What makes you think these items aren't magical?"
Grabbing a charm in the shape of a four-leaf clover, Isabel waved it. "This is just plastic. There's no magic in it."
"You think you know magic, dearie?"
The sharp gaze pinned her. Given how Isabel was raised, it was not conceited at all to say, "As a matter of fact, I do."
"And what kind of magic are you looking for that you don't see? Luck? Angling for a promotion at work? Perhaps you need a curse for a co-worker who's been bringing you down, or do you need something to help your love life?"
A sly glance tossed at Chris, who had finished the plate of cookies and leaned back, grinning at the large bladed fan spinning on the ceiling. Someone appeared dazed and confused. Turning an accusing stare on Babette, she snapped,
What did you do to him? What was in those cookies?
She dropped her uneaten one on the counter and scrubbed her hand on her pants, lest it seep into her skin.
A bit of opium, not enough to hurt him. I need him alive if I'm to fetch a proper price.
Babette's expression turned calculating.
What price? Who are you selling him to? What am I saying?
Isabel jumped to her feet and loomed over the older woman. You can't sell him, or me. Do you have any idea who we are? Because she had just figured out who she faced. At that, Babette's lips split into a wide smile, with big teeth and clear avarice.
I do indeed know who you are. I recognized you the moment you walked in the door. Isabel Rasputin, the granddaughter of the mighty Russian wizard, and, as if you weren't prize enough, Lucifer's son, and you think my charms aren't lucky.
The old woman tisked, and with each shake of her head and cluck of her tongue, the shop began to lose some of its shiny brightness.
I knew investing in that newfangled internet business would pay off.
The magical authority will hear about this, Isabel declared.
Do you really think I care what those old fools say?
The woman laughed, the cherubic sound transitioning into something darker, more menacing.
They'll do nothing. They wouldn't dare.
My mother will be too late to help you, dearie. The lips spat the name.
By the time she realizes what I've done, I'll have ground your bones into dust.
The shop darkened further, and suddenly the things that seemed so innocuous took a darker turn. The gummy eye of newt became bloody and floating in liquid, the tongue desiccated and gross, the rabbit's foot still bloody and fresh. Isabel backed away and fumbled at her hip for her magical sword, only her fingers grasped nothing as the old woman advanced on her.
Looking for something, dearie?
The old woman, whose cheeks lost their rounded appearance and whose eyes glinted with darkness, laughed.
Your magic won't work in my store. This is my realm, my rules. My mother will kill you if you harm me.
Mother would avenge her against one of her oldest adversaries, but vengeance didn't exactly help her at the moment.
Your mother isn't strong enough to face me.
The arrogant sneer pulled the woman's lips tight.
What I still don't understand is why you're here. Why come to my shop instead of going to your mother for aid?
Since there was no harm in the telling, she told Babette the truth. We sought protective Grigri charms. Mother was better at curses.
To protect against what?
Marie Laveau, we want to visit her grave.
Her grave? You mean that empty tomb that people worship?
The old woman snickered.
You mean she lives?
The rumors claimed she did, yet they also claimed Elvis roamed the mortal plane. False. Everyone knew he had a permanent gig in the second circle of the pit.
By certain standards, yes.
Do you know where I can find her? Isabel asked.
I know everything, except what business you have with that woman.
We need to speak to her about a soul that is trapped.
You think to demand information?
A cackle erupted.
You would have needed more than a simple bag of herbs and magic to protect you from the likes of Laveau. That woman only deals in trades, and the most valuable thing you can offer is about to become mine.
Isabel frowned. If you can't help, then I guess coming to your shop was a waste of our time. Time to take our leave and chance a meeting with Madame Laveau.
You aren't leaving, dearie.
The old woman reached for her, fingers longer than before, tipped in yellow nails, sharpened to a point. Isabel leaned back, wishing for her sword. But the spot at her side remained empty, leaving only her hands and her wits. Surely she could handle one little old woman, if that little old lady weren't a sorceress. She managed to dodge the first zing of magic. Lucky, too, since the zap froze the shelving unit behind her. She jabbed, but the old woman proved spry and dodged with a cackle.
"You'll have to be quicker than that, dearie."
Isabel ducked and evaded the next fling of magic. A lean to the side and a quick step behind a shelf avoided a few more. The jars on the shelving unit wobbled and gave her an idea. She lobbed one, then another. The satisfying crunch of glass not accompanied by any grunts of pain or shrieks.
"Do you know how expensive those are, dearie?"
the old witch complained.
"Maybe I'll fatten you up and sell you by the pound."
"You won't win," Isabel exclaimed, crouching to the floor and using her shoulder to heave at the case holding the macabre goods. The noise and subsequent chaos allowed her to scoot behind another tall shelving unit just in time to avoid the sticky web tossed where she'd last stood.
"I always win, dearie, but sometimes I like to play with my new toys first. Catch."
The ball of slime hit the bookcase and soaked in, the acid chewing at it quickly and dangerously. Isabel backed away, but had nowhere to really hide. Nowhere the witch wouldn't find her. And the old bitch knew it. Baba smiled and waggled her fingers.
"Gotcha."
Standing straight and tall, Isabel smiled wider. "You're right. I do." And that was when the tables turned.
Chapter 13. Time to stop pretending and playing possum. While the old bat was busy tossing slime and other shit at Isabel, Christopher moved silently off the stool and crept close. When she lifted her hand, cackling in premature triumph, he plucked the old woman from the floor, his arms cinched around her middle, trapping her in his grip.
"Put me down," screeched the old broad. "You should be sleeping."
"You mean because of the drugs in the cookies?" Christopher smiled. "They were delicious, however. It'll take more than a few pinches of opium to put me out. My mother used to lace my bottles with it as a baby because I was colicky."
"That is seriously wrong," Isabel mentioned, approaching with a shake of her head. "Who does that to their kid?"
He shrugged. "I didn't mind, and I turned out all right."
"Matter of opinion," Isabel coughed into her hand. But her soft smile turned it into a joke. Look at them bonding.
"You will release me at once."
"Release you or what?"
"Do you have any idea who I am?"
The not-so-nice woman screeched and squirmed.
She also tickled, which was weird because the tickle didn't come from any fingers, but he could feel it touching him somehow.
"She's doing something," he remarked. "Probably some magic. Isn't that right, Baba Yaga? Except you need your hands to cast, don't you?" Isabel taunted.
"No idea who that is."
Isabel scoffed.
"Please. As soon as you dropped your sweet grandma guys, I knew who you were."
"I knew she was lying about something," he exclaimed.
"But why lie about her name?"
"Because I am renowned," spat the witch.
"I don't know you."
A claim that earned him a round of cursing in Russian by the old witch. Ignoring her, he spoke to Isabel.
"So who is the old broad?"
"Not Babette Yager, that's for sure. Talk about a feeble cover," Isabel snorted. "And you're not as bright as I expected, because while you might know who I am, you obviously didn't do your homework. I am Rasputin's granddaughter. I am a force to be reckoned with. Did you really think my grandfather wouldn't have warned me about you? Some of my earliest lessons were about you, and they had pictures."
"If you knew who I was, then why are you here, cursed child?"
Baba Yaga stopped struggling to glare.
"I told you, I want information."
"I don't deal in the dead," the witch spat.
"I know, and you're not the one I want information from. I need someone more powerful than you." Chris couldn't help but murmur, "Oh, snap." The insult made the body he held tremble.
"Marie Laveau is a hack."
"Such a hack that she's lived beyond her natural years."
"So have I,"
spat Baba Yaga. But you can't help others do it, can you? While I know Marie can transplant souls into new bodies. If you're so enamored with her, then why are you here? Chris was wondering, too. He'd known there was something hinky the moment they entered the shop, but he'd played along. Isabel obviously had a plan, and when it came to things with magic, he deferred to her, and gladly provided the muscle when needed. As you mentioned, Marie Laveau won't speak to me without some kind of enticement. You want a gift? Take something, anything. My shop is at your disposal. Chris frowned. The old woman capitulated too easily. What do you have of worth? Many things. Potions and charms. Rare ingredients. Isabel shook her head. Much too common for what I need. Baba Yaga here only has one thing Marie Laveau would want. I won't become her prisoner, Baba Yaga stated, head held at an arrogant angle at odds with her disheveled appearance. You're too old for Madame Laveau's spells, but you do have something unique. Isabel dove at the woman and scrounged in her pockets. This resulted in some mighty thrashing and cursing, most of it in a foreign language that involved much spittle. Chris, his arms corded and strong from years of digging graves, held on as Isabel searched the many pockets hidden on the old lady. She finally exclaimed, "Aha!" and stood, holding a bowl made of dark stone. It had a knobby thing sitting inside, not a spoon or any kind of kitchen tool he'd seen. "What is that?" "This is Baba Yaga's mortar and pestle, the only one of its kind." "What does it do?" he asked. "Would you believe it's how she flies?" He eyed it askance. "Isn't her ass a tad too large for that?" Baba Yaga huffed, but Isabel giggled. "Good thing she can make it bigger using magic. Can we use it?" "If we knew the right spell, but we won't be using it for transport. This will make a fitting gift for Madame Laveau." "Don't you dare give it to that woman!" "Look at you, giving ultimatums." Chris jiggled the witch. "Aren't you just adorable?" He brought his lips close to the woman's ear. "You will serve the prince that shall come, or you will join those who suffer for their disrespect." And then he blew, a hot puff of air that somehow managed to convey the horrors he could inflict should Baba Yaga choose to thwart him. She stilled in his grasp. Isabel had missed their little conversation, intent on their prize. She tucked it into her purse. "Let's go. We're done here." Chris lifted the old lady. "What should I do with her?" A roll of her shoulders accompanied Isabel's, "Kill her." That seemed cold even for Isabel. Chris looked down at the crown of gray hair and remembered the delicious cookies. He also recognized the power in the old body, a power he might want to use one day. Instead of wringing her neck, he hung Baba Yaga on a hook and stood in front of her. "So, listen. You will die, son of Lucifer. I shall rip your eyeballs from your head and eat them like grapes. I shall roast your testicles on an open fire and feed them..." "Enough!" he roared as Isabel placed her hand on his back. The word bounced around and silenced the old woman. "I am the abomination of desolation, he who shall one day rule, and I will have need of soldiers in my army. Will you serve me?" The old woman stared at him, lips pursed, eyes dark and unreadable. "Give me back my mortar and pestle." "No." "What will you give me if I agree?" "Life." And then, because he began to understand her, added, "and a chance for chaos and power." They stared at each other, and he saw the flames dancing in his eyes, reflected in her own gaze. Slowly she nodded her head. "I will serve the king of Babylon." He smiled. "And make me cookies." "Christopher!" Isabel exclaimed. "What? Those were really fucking good. You should have had one." "No, thank you. I prefer to catch real butterflies, not imaginary ones."
Bah, there was barely enough opium in there to give me a buzz.
Let's go.
She grabbed him by the hand and pulled him from the store. But before the door shut, he heard the old woman exclaim,
"Watch for those who would sway you from your path."
The door slammed shut, and he frowned at it. "Who was she talking about?" he asked.
"Who knows? Probably your mother and her henchmen."
"Maybe I should find out." He went to grab the knob, only it moved. The whole shop moved, shrinking in on itself and changing appearance from a pastel-painted small building to a wooden shack. A shack that stood up on giant chicken legs. A tad unexpected.
"What the fuck?" he exclaimed.
"What is it now?"
Isabel asked, only to get interrupted by a huge woof as Goshen burst out of the car. How he'd managed to open the door was less interesting than the size of the drumsticks on the sidewalk. The giant mutt began barking at the chicken house, and Isabel wagged her finger at him.
"Don't you dare eat it. I doubt it's good for you."
Except Goshen didn't care if it agreed with his digestion. With a snarl, he lunged, and the house might have clucked. It certainly didn't stand still. Chris stood staring a while after the house on chicken legs left, chased down the street by a ginormous dog.
"Just when you thought you'd seen it all."
"Think your mutt will catch her?" he asked.
Shaking her head, Isabel said,
"No, Baba Yaga hasn't lived this long without learning how to evade hunters. She is renowned for her wily ways.
How long do we wait for your dog to come back?"
Staring off at the end of the empty street, Isabel frowned.
"We don't, because I am not even sure he's coming back."
"So you don't care?"
"Of course I do. But let's face facts. Gushi hooked up with me, by accident. I don't technically own him, so I can't exactly tell him what to do."
"Yeah, because he'd eat your face if he didn't like it."
"Gushi wouldn't hurt me, and given he's special, I'm sure he knows how to find me if he wants to come back. He is, after all, a hellhound."
The reminder she'd gotten a dog from his realm, which should have been his birthright, still annoyed. He should have been the one the hound chose.
"When I get a cat, he's gonna be bigger and badder than her dog.
And striped. Because nothing screamed badass ruler like a king with a tiger, a hell tiger of his own.
What if those didn't exist?"
"He'd make one. Somehow." "Shall we go see this Marie broad now?" he suggested. "They'd kicked one witch's ass. Time to move on to the next."
"I don't know if we should," Isabel frowned. "We're getting close to the witching hour, and I don't know about you, but I'm exhausted after all that driving. We need to be at our best when we meet her."
"Is she that powerful?" he asked, totally intrigued.
Ever since meeting Isabel, he'd been introduced to a world his cult upbringing had hinted at, but which he'd not truly believed in until meeting her. "According to the stuff I've been pulling up, she is ridiculously powerful. But more than that, we can't afford to screw this up. She's probably the only person we can turn to for help getting my dad back.
Let's crash for the night and then hit her up tomorrow."
Which was how they ended up in a motel room with two full-sized beds covered in flowered comforters. The carpet was a low-weave patterned thing in gray and taupe. The dressers black melamine, the long one sporting a television bolted to the top. The cardboard teepee on top explained how to order the pay-per-view channels and called the porn one Blue Moon Videos. Classy. The shower ran behind a locked bathroom door, bolted instead of wide open, giving him a peep show, leaving Chris alone in the room instead of naked under the spray with Isabel. Totally wrong. After all, he'd saved the day, taken charge of that old witch and gotten them what they needed. But did he get rewarded with a blowjob? Not even a hand job.
"Women, always taking advantage of our good nature."
The sudden appearance of and words spoken by his dad didn't take Chris by surprise. He'd felt the shift in the air and scented the brimstone.
Would it kill you to knock?
Me? Show some manners?
Lucifer appeared quite appalled at the concept.
Now you sound just like your sister, who is doing much better in the sinning department lately than you are. Did you know she's about to start living with two guys and isn't married? She knows how to make a father proud.
If you like her so much, why don't you go bug her? He snapped.
I will. She's about to lead the charge in an epic battle to save hell.
Chris growled. If you just came here to throw her in my face, then fuck off. I don't need you.
Of course you don't, because you're doing so well on your own.
Lucifer rolled his eyes before he glanced at the bathroom door.
You might be my son, but you apparently don't have what it takes to truly follow in my dick steps. Exactly why are you out here instead of in there, banging her against a wall?
We can't have sex. Isabel is wearing a chastity belt.
And?
Lucifer shook his head.
Have some imagination, boy. It's not all about inserting your prick into her pussy. There are other ways to get off.
Are you saying I should make her go down on me? Because that sounded like a great idea.
No point in having them both suffer. His blue balls agreed. Lucifer gaped at him. That's selfish, even by my standards.
Well then, what are you talking about?
How is it you're related to me? Use your head for something other than a hat rack, boy. Think.
Thinking only made him yearn harder. Ruminating didn't ease the need he had to sink balls deep into her. You know what? I am not discussing this with you. I can wait for the wedding. Chris laced his hands under his head and adopted a more relaxed pose. He wasn't about to let his dad see how he was getting to him.
Has the chickie agreed to wed your sorry ass?
Not exactly, but it won't be long now. We're seeing someone about freeing her dad tomorrow. Once that's done, we'll hit the nearest church for an I do, and she is mine. That had a nice ring to it.
You can't free her dad.
Way to give him support. He glared at Lucifer. Maybe I can't do it personally, but apparently this Laveau broad can lend us a hand.
You will not see the witch. I forbid it.
Those words, they made a man want to run out and disobey right that very second.
You can forbid all you like. I'm still doing it. I really wouldn't if I were you. There's a reason Isabel's father is stuck and can't return.
So you know he's not really dead. Chris sat up on the bed. Why haven't you told anyone?
Because it would serve no purpose. Thomas has to remain where he is.
And where is that?
I'm not telling, and you can't make me, Lucifer sang.
The realization that his father once more fucked him around didn't sit well with Chris. He bristled and snarled. Is his disappearance your fault? Did you do something to Isabel's dad?
Me?
An attempt to look innocent failed miserably. Lucifer's wide eyes couldn't hide the mischief dancing within.
I didn't do a thing to that man. But I do know why he ended up where he is. And you'll leave him alone if you know what's good for you.
What was good for him was having Isabel agree to marry him. Because the willful king needs a queen. Chris shook his head. No can do. Part of my deal with Isabel to tie the knot involves saving his ass. Wherever it is.
There will be no saving, and while we're on the topic of things I forbid, I don't want you marrying the chickie either.
Now Chris was really confused. Did the effects of the opium linger? It might explain why this conversation made no sense. Back the fuck up. You told me I had to marry her, or else you'd kill her and her entire family.
Forget I said that. Forget the girl entirely. I'll pay her grandfather what I owe and settle the debt.
I don't give a shit about your debt. I still want her as my wife.
Lucifer eyed him, his brows drawn tight. Don't you dare use the big L word. You're a Baphomet, not a sissy man with feelings. Pussy isn't worth that kind of humiliation. Pussy is everywhere you look. You don't need to shackle yourself to get some. What if I want to get married? Who intentionally puts on a ball and chain?
There's nothing wrong with marriage when a man you can do it. Say it. Say it. Likes a ducky and wants her to commit. A mighty scowl